In professional wrestling podcasting, the people reviewing and recapping pay-per-views are represented by two separate yet equally important groups: Cold Shots and Hot Takes. These are their stories.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, welcome to the Stone Cold Shots podcast, a podcast where the shots are cold and the takes are hot, and the verdict is final.
Oh.
Every episode, we review and recap wrestling from any era, from any company. Today, we're doing something a little different. First, why don't you guys introduce yourself and tell our listeners, if you could ride one vehicle to the ring, any kind of vehicle, what vehicle would you ride to the ring in?
Oh.
Oh, man. Okay.
This sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks being on this
side. It sucks being put on the spot, doesn't it, Campbell?
This really sucks.
Yeah. My name is Lauren Maxine. I'm a regular darling, and I can't think of much right now, so being put on the spot, I think I would drive a Mini Cooper to the ring, because my character is going to be based around thievery and stealing stuff, as in a la, like, what's it called? The Italian Job and heists and such. So I would need my little Mini Cooper car. That's my answer.
I'm nobody's darling, Campbell Falconer, your heel host.
He's going to come in with a fucking monster truck.
No, I would like to ride a boat to the ring.
Will you have a lay around your neck?
Wrong pay-per-view.
I would be like vibing my best Jimmy Buffett life.
Yeah.
I would come in on a fucking chill boat with a margarita or a daiquiri or a hurricane. Maybe all three. Who knows?
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yeah, and 5 o'clock somewhere would probably be my entrance music. Although, if I could pull a bit of a Mankind, I would come in hot with 5 o'clock somewhere. And then when I won, I would exit to Tin Cup Chalice.
I do not know that song.
It's my favorite Jimmy Buffett deep cut for all you parrot heads out there in the Stone Cold Shots universe.
I didn't realize Mankind had two different songs. Why don't more wrestlers do that, where they'll have like a different entrance and a different exit song? That's cool.
Elias had that for a while.
Yeah, Elias did have that for a bit.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And of course, I'm your judge, the internet darling, Josh Felix Pryor. Today, we're here to hear the case of WCW's pay-per-view, Hog Wild.
Well, hold up. You didn't say what you would come to the ring on.
Oh,
Your
listen,
Honor.
That's
sorry,
more important
if I may.
Order. Order in the court. I would, of course, come on a motorcycle with a sidecar from a dog, Gladys.
Aww. Gladys.
I love it.
Please, after that brief recess. Again, we are here today to hear the case of WCW's pay-per-view event, Hog Wild. This event took place in Sturgis, South Dakota, of course at the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally. Attendance of 5,000 screaming hog-wheeling, kiss-stealing, salt-of-the-earth, wrestling proficionados.
Indeed.
Our prosecution today is nobody's darling, Campbell Falconer, who'll be arguing that this pay-per-view is hot garbage and should be stricken from the record. Defendant, the regular darling, Lauren Maxine, will attempt to prove this pay-per-view's aight.
I'll be proving it's more than aight. I'll be proving it's sick.
I'll be the judge of that. There'll be an opportunity for opening statements for each match, followed by a rebuttal period. I may ask clarifying questions, or I may state my verdict immediately. Verdicts will be tabulated to calculate the ultimate judgment for the PAPE. Segments and interviews will not be considered as evidence, but can be discussed.
Nice.
Prosecution, you may start.
Ooh.
Now, I may be just a small country
lawyer. Are you really going to do this again? You're going to small country lawyer me?
Hey, the people love this bit, all right? The people subscribe for this bit.
Ugh.
I may be just a small country lawyer, but I know good wrestling and I know bad wrestling.
Objection. Do you?
Yeah, this was a lot of all sizzle and no steak. I think the outdoor presentation, the all the commentators and backstage personalities dressed up in their motorcycle Halloween costumes really made a mockery of our fine sport and really exposed the business. And I think that, you know what, they called this Hog Wild. They should have called this Wild Hogs, because it was just as bad as a Tim Allen and William H. Macy movie that Peter Fonda... I was surprised that Peter Fonda wasn't forced to appear in the main event of this horrific pay-per-view.
Okay. I dispute that. I didn't realize we were doing like a full argument for the entire thing. But this pay-per-view premise is so cool. It's like out in South Dakota with like...
Your Honor, she clearly doesn't even know what's going on.
I just stated it was in South Dakota at the beginning of this.
It's in South Dakota. In like, there's like cool mountains and hills in the background, and it starts at like 6 p.m. So the it's like afternoon evening lighting, and like the crowd is so excited, and there's so many people there with their motorcycles. And the best part of this is that every time they're excited or they want to pump up their wrestler of choice, they will just rev their engines and honk their horns. And it is so exciting when you're watching it, when everyone's like revving their engines up. It's like so sick. And they have like this cool helicopter overhead doing all these helicopter shots. And that's really exciting as well, to get like the whole full overview shot that you could never get if you were inside.
The picture you painted, Miss Maxine, sounds very bucolic. Yeah. And unfortunately, that does not go towards the verdict.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I think it's a well-rounded pay-per-view. Like, in general, all of the matches are great. And it's well-balanced. And we will explore that more.
Your Honor, Tony Schiavone looks like he got that tattoo on a dare from a hot biker chick the night before.
I will say Tony Schiavone looks bad. But Dusty Rhodes makes up for it, because he looks sickening in his like denim on denim getup with like a denim like cut off button down and like tucked into his jean pants and like with a cool black belt. He just looks really powerful.
He looked like a fat Rob Halford, which is cool, but that's what he looks like.
I don't know who that is, so that argument bears nothing.
Rob Halford from the singer from Judas Priest.
Order.
No one Order. In Judas Priest looks cool.
Please stay on task.
All right, are we going to go through this like sort of part by part?
It's up to the judge.
Go match by match. If you wish to discuss anything in between matches, I will allow it.
Okay.
We should clarify here that Judge Pryor has not actually watched the pay-per-view and is
right.
Solely basing his judgments and bald head ratings off of our arguments here.
Yeah, so we're feeling the pressure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, I wanna close my eyes and pretend I'm in Sturgis with my fancy motorcycle. My pup.
Do you want to hear prosecution or defense first?
Prosecution first.
Okay. So we start off with the Ultimate Dragon, accompanied by Sonny Ono, versus Rey Mysterio Jr. For no belt at all.
No, Rey Mysterio is the cruiserweight champion.
Oh, well, those cruiserweights can cruise or wait, brother. this
sounds like you're leaving out evidence.
this match is a prime example of 1990s professional wrestling xenophobia gone awry. This is everything involving Mr. Dragon and Mr. Ono is just yellow peril racism at its absolute worst. Rey Mysterio is billed as Mexico for some reason, despite being born in Chula Vista, California. I want to point some evidence from the commentary here. One Mr. Heenan saying, "You don't have to speak Spanish in Mexico, $8 American and you're living well." He also asks why a move isn't called the Cesar Romero special. Beyond that, I just think that the match in and of itself is a little underwhelming, a little underexciting. We have Ultimo Dragon with absolutely zero discernible heel tactics. Botches a surfboard stretch, and there is no 619, despite the fact that Rey Mysterio wins and retains off of an absolute nothing move.
I don't know.
And your premise for this match is that there has to be a heel and there has to be a face.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, so the heel is Ultimate Dragon and the face is Rey Mysterio. You can tell because Rey Mysterio Jr. is dressed up like Spider-Man, and that means he's cool. Ultimate Dragon comes in wearing like a sick cape. The commentators set the stage saying that like Rey Mysterio Jr. was recently unmasked, possibly by the NWO. I didn't catch who unmasked him.
Storytelling is unclear.
But so that's cool. And also to be noted, this match is pretty exciting because it's the first time that Ultimate Dragon and Rey Mysterio are fighting each other because they used to be a tag team together. So it's like pretty cool that they're fighting each other and there's really high stakes because they've never fought each other before. And it's like a sick match. You're just like fully lying about how cool this match was because, you know, it's got Ultimate Dragon and Rey Mysterio in it. So there's tons of cool, like, fast-paced flippy flips and like reversals. Like the entire first like 10 minutes of this match are super fast-paced like reversals and like grab and then blah and counter and all of that stuff. So it was really cool. And, like, it showed that they knew each other really, really well because they were in a tag team together. So they were able to, like, see each other's moves before they did them. So that's why the first half of the match was, like, really sick and, like, fast-paced. And then it gets a bit more plotting because Ultimate Dragon is the heel and he does a lot of, like, he'll do big moves, but he won't pin Rey because he wants to punish him more and he'll go for more submission moves.
That does sound like heel tactics.
Yeah.
Falconer left out.
Yeah, he's going for punishment, right? And this match has one of the coolest moves in the entire pay-per-view. So, to paint you a picture here, the ring is, because they're outside on dirt, in like a sort of basin of earth, the ring is on this huge raised platform so that the crowd around on motorcycles can see. So the ring is on this raised platform dais, and there's like the regular space between the ring and the barricade is there. But beyond that, there's just a, like, what did I say? 10 to 12 foot drop with no railings.
Objection. Objection. It was 6 feet at most.
No, one of the commentators said 10 to 12 feet. That's why I wrote it down.
Yes, the same commentator who said, need I remind you.
You can't just interrupt me, bro.
It was an objection.
Order.
Yeah. Order. Ultimate Dragon's outside on the ground, and Rey Mysterio just fucking jumps from the top turnbuckle and jumps outside down onto the ground. So he's jumping like 10 to 12 feet outside onto the ground, and he jumps right up onto the guy, and it was sick. And Rey wins, so it was a very satisfying end.
Retains his Cruiserweight Championship.
That's right.
Interesting. Campbell, any closing comments for this match?
I will concede that Mr. Mysterio Jr. May have been decades ahead of his time. As a colossal nerd cosplaying as a Marvel superhero. And that does not a good match make. I believe that the very phoned-in hot-dogging to the crowd and refusal of a pin coming from Mr. Dragon was, you know, not really enough to get me as a viewer to dislike him and feel the disdain that I'm supposed to feel as a red-blooded American for this Japanese slash maybe Mexican invader? Is that what I'm supposed to feel about this match? And I found the antics of
Mr. should be on commentary by the sounds of this.
Yeah.
And I found the antics of Mr. Ono to be chicanerous and distracting at best. Nothing doing as far as getting any kind of heat for this match went. So overall, you know, very middle of the road, very whatever. Spider-Man cosplay, -5 bald heads, if you will, Your Honor.
Well, there's no argument that Rey Mysterio is a gigantic nerd. And obviously that has no bearing on this match.
Yeah.
By the picture painted here, it sounds like Ultimo Dragon. Again, very absentee of his belt. Must have looked strange coming to the ring without 7 belts draped across him. I will concede, though, Miss Maxine put together a very good case. It sounded like there was dips and dives and twirls and whirls. There was jumpy flippies, and there was 10-foot to 12-foot dives by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
This match clearly goes into the favor of the defense. This is without a question. Even though Mr. Falconer tried to hide clear evidence that there was heel tactics by both Mr. Sonny Ono and Mr. Dragon, clearly this was a good match. Based on that description, I'm going to go ahead and give this 3¾ bald heads.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, not bad. For those of you who are new to this podcast and maybe very, very confused, the bald head rating is the gold standard of professional wrestling podcast rating systems out of a potential 5 bald heads.
And it's especially interesting because, again, Josh has not seen this pay-per-view going solely off of our descriptions with these bald head ratings.
I think that rating was pretty spot on, though, if I'm being honest.
I do too, yeah. I do too.
All right. Anything in between this match and the next match you two would like to discuss?
Yeah, if you thought Tony Schiavone looked like a fucking goof in this fake biker outfit, get a load of Mean Gene Okerlund here. He looks like the picture on like a Walmart Halloween costume for a biker.
I didn't know who it was.
And he's telling you about the
very carefully here, Mr. Faulkner. I will not hear the disparagement of Mr. Mean Gene Okerlund.
Telling everybody about the WCW hotline, which they can call right now.
And they were kind of doing like a lot of teasers about like who may. They were saying like we'll be letting you know who might be coming to support NWO coming up.
Mm-hmm.
They never did that.
No.
But they said that they would. They were accepting calls of people like saying what they wanted to say like about NWO. Because NWO had just formed, so it was fresh in everybody's minds. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a big thing. Next, we have a challenge match between Scott Norton versus Ice Train.
Fans, please take us.
Okay. The announcers describe this as a challenge, but it might as well be a grudge match between Scott Norton and Ice Train. And Scott Norton comes out in a cool red singlet with pink shorts, like pink flame shorts, and he's got like a tiny little baby mullet happening. And Ice Train is wearing a red singlet with black leggings, and he just looks cool. And this is just like your like general fulfilling hoss fight, and it starts out like two big boys going at it in the ring. It starts out with them just like slapping the shit out of each other, which is just very pleasurable to watch because they're so ginormous, so it's just like and it's great. It starts off with Scott Norton on like the dominant end, like he's just kicking the shit out of Ice Train for the first while. These two are actually also an ex-tag team, which is pretty cool. They used to be called Ice and Fire, hence the fire tights, with Ice Train. The other, like, thing going into this match is that Ice Train has this big bandage, going across his chest. Apparently he hurt his arm, so for the entire match, Scott Norton is just, like, going for Ice Train's arm, and like doing submission moves, and he ends up winning with a submission move on Ice Train's broken arm. It was a pretty quick match, perfectly serviceable.
Trying to plant seeds for bald head ratings, I see.
I would never dare to give a bald head rating. That's your job, judge.
With the court. Trying to tamper with the court, Ms. Messing. Mr. Falconer?
Scott Norton versus Ice Train. More like Snooze Borton versus Ice pained me to watch this match.
Horrible.
Can I ask what the fuck a challenge match is? That, what is that stipulation? This is nothing. This is completely meaningless. This was just filler. They needed something to put. They honestly, what they needed, and no jokes here, what they needed was they needed a match to put after the curtain jerker so that people weren't invested and the commentary could spend the entire match talking about the NWO. Because that is exactly what happened here. There was, this was like the, I said like the 2019 Triple H special of matches where it's just one dude working a body part really slowly ad nauseum.
It was a short match.
Heenan is just like absolutely phoning in this entire pay-per-view. He even says at one point, Ice Train should have tapped 20 minutes ago when the match was less than 10 minutes, but felt like it took my entire life. This match was awful. It was like punch, kick, rest, hold, repeat. Ice Train got in probably about 30 seconds of offense and then tapped to the weakest looking, like somewhere between an armbar and a crossface. It didn't even look like a real submission hold. It looked like a rest hold. This was just terrible.
A quick rebuttal. The,
defense. Yeah, okay. I will remind you that this is my fourth.
I'm so sorry.
Please, defense.
Heenan saying that Ice Train should have tapped a while ago. It definitely wasn't, like, the whole match wasn't 20 minutes. But he was saying that to, like, raise the stakes and, like, show how cool Ice Train was and that he was super resilient and holding out and that he did not want to give in to this, like, huge rival of his. And it was really cool. And I really felt for Ice Train the whole time. And it was sad when he tapped. It was, like, sad.
I was just happy it was over.
Well, it was such a short match. Where are you getting this from?
I've heard enough. As pleasurable as you found this match, Miss Maxine. Scott Norton's the pink tights and Campbell's clever names is Hughes Norton. This match indeed does sound boring and paint by numbers, and
quite frankly,
Miss Maxine, I could see why this match should be stricken from the record. I give this 2.5 bald heads.
Yeah, a wise judgment.
We have a weird little video package here of Ric Flair talking about an attack on Arn Anderson at the hands of the NWO.
Yeah, and he's saying it's personal because it's against one of the Four Horsemen, and he's gonna get him.
Mm-hmm. And then we have an ad for Hog Wild merchandise.
And all of the merchandise looks so sick. They have this really cool emblem, like, logo developed for Hog Wild. Like, this doesn't even count. This is actually, legitimately, like, their logo was sick, and they had it printed on a denim jacket, which is sick. When did they ever do cool merch like that? Never.
I will concede, that does sound sick. Prosecution, do you have any rebuttal?
Here's my thing about this Hog Wild merch is that, like, I thought the logo looked a little corny. Like, it was like if The Gap tried to do a Hell's Angels line of jean jackets. And I also wonder, because it was, like, in the style of, like, they had, like, a top banner, a bottom banner, and a logo in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And, I legit wonder if anybody got stabbed over these jackets.
Oh, my God.
Those, like, your top banner, your bottom banner are, like, things that in biker gangs you have to earn, right? And, like, if people, like, this is...
I think the fact that Campbell knows that shows the type of person he is. And you should take that into account.
I've taken note of the ad hominem here.
I thought this Hog Wild march looked, one, corny, and two, dangerous.
Like, that's bullshit. Oh my God, I would buy the fuck out of a wrestling denim jacket.
Oh my God.
I wish they still did cool shit like that.
Yeah.
Although it was $80.
$80 in 1996.
I was like, that's expensive, straight up. But I would also still buy it.
Next match, please.
So the next match is Bull Nakano, also accompanied by Sonny Ono, versus Medusa. The stipulation on this match is that they both rode out to the ring on motorcycles. Bull Nakano on a Honda, painted with the Imperial Japanese flag, and Medusa on a Harley Davidson that was pink, I believe.
Yes.
But she was wearing an American flag outfit. And the loser of the match would have their motorcycle destroyed with via sledgehammer.
Yeah.
Prosecution, you're up.
Miss Nakano is a legend of 1990s Japanese women's wrestling. And for her to be partaking in, once again, this incredibly xenophobic yellow peril sort of storyline, this incredibly short match with a ridiculous finish, completely underserves how good of a wrestler she is, and how like how much I was looking forward to watching this match of two of like the bigger names of Japanese and American 90s women's wrestling. This match didn't really have anything going for it. It was really short. There were a whole bunch of like really weird USA chants coming from the audience. So this was basically like the 90s equivalent of watching like a Lacey Evans match. I'll get to the finish in a second, but I also want to talk about like, again, the commentary specifically in regards to Sonny Ono and Bull Nakano. They say she's got to start popping that clutch and hitting those gears, which isn't how motorcycles work. Heenan keeps making these jokes about Schwinn bicycles. Like, he makes about like three different jokes over the course of this match about pedal bicycles. And anytime either woman goes for a pinfall, regardless of if it was a one count, a two count, or almost a three count, Bobby the Brain Heenan says, "Oh, she got her." And Tony Schiavone has to say, "No, she didn't." And then the finish is super weird, where like Bull Nakano hits Medusa with a power bomb, and the ref hits a two count, but it was a really close two count. And Sonny Ono on the side of the ring goes, "Oh, she got her, she won," and grabs a sledgehammer and starts hitting Medusa's motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
And then Medusa runs out and slaps around Sonny Ono a little bit, and then grabs the sledgehammer to start hitting Bull Nakano's Honda motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ref just says, "Oh yeah, Medusa wins." And the commentary is saying like, "Oh, it was a little confusing there, but I guess Medusa actually had Bull Nakano in a pin, except for the fact that it was a sit out power bomb with Bull Nakano's feet over Medusa's shoulders. There was like, Bull Nakano was in a sitting position.
Mm-hmm.
There's no possible fucking way that she could have been pinned there. So it was just like a really ridiculous finish to just further the like kind of weird like Sonny Ono yellow peril storyline that they're trying to tell with this stable, that like kind of marred the matches in the undercard that had objectively really, really great performers and were just tainted with this like awful storytelling of like Sonny Ono yelling at the camera in an awful like slap a jap accent, building a stable. It was not great. I was not like very, very underwhelmed by this match in all seriousness.
Defense, so what do you have to say for yourself here?
I really love the way that they both ride up on their motorcycles to begin. Like, Bull's got her hair gelled up, like, in a spike, but it's also a fin, and it's just the front part of her hair up, so it's just a giant, like, spiky fin, like a dinosaur, and she, like, rides up, and she looks like a fucking demon on this motorcycle, like, a fucking, like, a bat out of hell comes up, and then Medusa comes out, and she looks like, just like a real, like, all-American woman. Again, she's in her, like, America gear on a pink motorcycle. My favorite part about her is that the announcers refer to her, Medusa, as Deuce, which I think is really cool. Like, throughout, they just call her Deuce, which is great.
Also, I'm stealing that nickname.
Isn't it? I love it. So Nakano immediately starts off super strong with fucking nunchucks and just starts wailing on Medusa with nunchucks, and she looks like she fucking knows how to use them. Like, she does the like blah, 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 into the armpit thing, and it looks really cool. And then she immediately gets rid of them, and it becomes like a real match. I didn't think that there were USA chants, but And it is clearly, like, xenophobic in that it's America versus, like, Japan or, like, foreigner. But, like, to me, it struck me more as, like, Hulk Hogan-esque or, like, as opposed to Lacey Evans-esque. Like, it's closer to that time period.
Hulk Hogan, a totally not racist character to base everything off of.
I'm not saying the storyline isn't racist. I'm not trying to argue that at all. It is a racist storyline, but it's a extremely, like, potent storyline, I guess, and, like, the crowd is really, really feeling it. There are so many motorcycle revs for this match. It's, like, deafening at one point. But, yeah, just, like, that storyline speaks to people, and, like, everyone wants to cheer on the, like, hot, blonde America babe, I guess. And there's also a sick part where Medusa's stuck in, like, a figure four, and Bull like, picks her up kind of like she's a bag. It was really cool. I've never seen anyone, like, pick somebody up while submitting them. It was sick. So, I will say that the end was a little screwy, but I choose to believe that the ref called it in favor of Deuce because Sonny attacked her bike. So maybe it was a DQ. It was a bit of a messy finish, but I think it was
Sorry, I think I've heard enough. Apologies, defense. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to this match that sounds like it would be cool. Motorcycle versus motorcycle is the stakes. The winner gets to destroy the loser's motorcycle. Nunchucks. I mean, nunchucks sound amazing. But, you know, that being said, you know, I know what women's wrestling was like in WCW at the time. And unfortunately, they didn't give them much time or, you know, ability to really showcase themselves. And most importantly, that bullshit bike attacking a bike DQ finish is all I needed to hear, to be frank with you. This should be absolutely stricken from the record. And he gets the verdict of 2¾ bald heads, only because of the nunchucks and the sweet bikes. Please, I've heard enough of this case, so.
I want to say that I agree. It was hard to argue for this match. It was a really, really botched finish on this match.
That being said, is, like, especially if you look at the caliber of women's wrestling in, like, 1996, This was wrestling. Yeah. And this really spoke to the caliber of performance of, like, Bull Nakano and Medusa being two really, really great performers that were just, like, shafted with an awful storyline and not enough time and a really dumb finish.
I feel like they just fucked it up. Like, I feel like she shouldn't have kicked out or something happened there where, like, or Sonny shouldn't have attacked the bike at that point.
Yeah.
It was weird.
Too much going on in the match.
Right?
They didn't have time to actually have a match. There's nunchucks and motorcycles and everything. So, also, they didn't get time to properly put together anything real.
Yeah. When Medusa, like, did destroy the motorcycle, it was super underwhelming.
I don't know. I think she learned really fast the parts of the bike that would shatter. Like, she initially tried to attack the back of the bike, and then she was like, that's not fucking doing shit. And then she went to the front and was going for the lights and shit.
And the mirrors. And, like, I don't know. It was fine.
You get to see someone destroy something. Like, that was probably super unsafe also. Like, she's wearing nothing, and she's attacking a bike with a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
I think it was cool. But, a botched finish for a women's match.
Is there anything before the next match you two would like to discuss?
There's, like, some wrestlers doing some, like, weird caveman shit on a computer. It was, like, service was called CompuServe.
It was the Steiner brothers on CompuServe just making motorcycle noises.
Okay. Who's defending that?
This was fucking hilarious.
It was so funny. I just didn't get what it was.
Lauren, do you want to introduce the next match? And you can defense can lead on this one.
Okay. So the next match is Dean Malenko.
Accompanied by Jimmy Hart.
Yes. Yes. Versus Chris Benoit. Accompanied by Woman and Miss Elizabeth. Because apparently this was Chris Benoit's, like, pimp phase?
Yeah, there's a lot going on with Chris Benoit at this part of his career.
Yeah. Okay, so, because, like, Chris Benoit, as I learned, because I don't know a lot about this time period, but Chris Benoit is part of the Four Horsemen right now, so he is a heel, and that's why he's got Miss Elizabeth and Woman with him. And they're, like, great talent to have on the outside of the ring. So as you would expect with these two, like, technical wrestlers, it's, like, a fucking technical, awesome, engaging match. It's just, I don't have the words because I'm not great with, like, describing wrestling, but they do so much, like, attacks and, like, submissions and then reversals and then grab and then reversal and, like, all of this, like, cool, like, quick technical stuff. There's this, oh yeah, okay, Chris Benoit does this really cool move that I've never seen before where he's like, he's slapping the shit out of Dean Malenko and doing like really showy pins, and one of the pins that he does is he like, he's on his back and he like, Dean is like crouching forward and Benoit like grabs his head and like flicks his head so that Dean does like a little flip and it goes right into a pin, and it's like, I don't even know the physics of that, but it was so cool. Yeah, and you know, just like real technical wrestling, couple of really cool power outs of pins using bridges, which was very cool and seemed really like hard to do, very strong. And at one point Benoit does a sick like starfish dive a la Seth Rogen in Pineapple Express, where he does the like dive off and that was sick. And Dean Malenko tombstones Benoit, and then there's a kick out and Dean goes for the pin like three times in a row after that, which is like one of my favorite things, is when a wrestler is just like, no, fuck you, I'm just gonna pin you over and over again to tire you out. And this match is, like, really sick because it's, like, two dudes who are so evenly matched that it ends with a timeout. It ends with a draw. It ends with a draw. And, I don't know why I wrote Dusty there. Oh, yeah. I can bring this up later. The match ends in a draw, and then the ref says, okay, we're going to go into, like, 5 minutes overtime. And they restart it, and it's, like, awesome wrestling again. And Benoit keeps submitting the same leg on Dean and getting, like, really shitty and heely about it. And then there's another draw. Like, they overdraw again. And the ref's like, okay, 5 minutes overtime again. These dudes are, like, exactly the same and hugely, like, evenly matched. And then Woman gets involved to finish it off. So Woman gets involved and she like grabs Dean and he tries to like grab her, and it's unclear of what he's about to do to her. Like, he was just grabbing Woman by her head, and I was like, okay. And then, which this wasn't clear, it was so subtly done, and you get it in the replay. Woman scratches his eyes, and then Benoit grabs him and rolls him up for the pin, and it was sick. Yeah. You wanna try to tell me that this was not an amazing technical match?
Prosecution, you've got your work cut out for you.
I want to say from jump here that I'm not going to take the low-hanging fruit. This is not...
the court appreciates that.
This is not a question of the character of the wrestlers in question. This is a character of the complete lack of proficiency in ring exhibited
by... You could say the measure of a man.
Yeah. First of all, Dean Malenko. I think we all mean Baldeen Malenko. Get a look at that hairline. Woof.
This is Campbell. This is the wrong line of argument.
We all remember the classic lineup of the Four Horsemen: Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Chris Benoit, oh, and Stevie Mongo McMichaels? Give me a fucking break here. This is an insult to the history of one of the greatest wrestling stables of all time.
This has nothing to do with the match.
And also, we literally just saw a promo package of a very heartfelt promo of Ric Flair talking about his friend Arn Anderson being assaulted by the NWO. The heel face alignment.
Mr. Falconer, this is all conjecture.
Look, the heel face alignment of this pay-per-view is all over the place. I don't know if I'm supposed to be rooting for Chris Benoit because his close friend Arn Anderson was just attacked by the NWO, or if I'm supposed to think he's a heel for coming out and showboating with these two women against Dean Malenko, who also has a manager shouting with a megaphone at ringside. It's all over the place. It's confusing. The storyline is completely unclear. Also, this match is 10 hours long. They go the distance, and then not one, but two overtimes on a pay-per-view? Are you fucking kidding me?
They were 5 minutes, bro.
Oh my god. Like, if you're gonna go to a draw on a pay-per-view, make it mean something. Give me a Kenny Omega and Okada draw. Make that draw mean something. Don't just give me two overtimes for the sake of an overbooked Vince Russo finish. All right? This is ridiculous. This match also isn't for anything. There's no title. The commentary keeps talking about Dean Malenko having a title shot against Rey Mysterio, but Rey Mysterio isn't involved in this match. Like,
Mr. Falconer, I have to get some clarity here. How is this match overbooked?
Two overtime finishes with three managers on the outside of the ring causing interference and distractions? Give me a break, pal.
There was no interference until a woman got involved at the very, very end. And she got involved because she had to. She had to put a stop to it because she knew that her boy wasn't going to win, that they were too evenly matched.
This match was 26 minutes long and could have done exactly what it needed to do in 15. Again, I posit to the jury that I may just be a small town country lawyer.
We don't have a jury.
Mr. Falconer, I have heard enough. I have heard enough.
It wasn't for anything. There was no belt. It didn't matter.
For a technical masterpiece, why would you want it to be shorter than what needs to be drawn out to tell a proper story throughout a match? And it sounds like 26 minutes, two overtimes, sounds like it would be perfect for this technical masterpiece to play out. Two of the top in the game, two of the best wrestlers to ever lace up a pair of boots. And you're saying overbooked. I didn't hear one example of overbooking in this match. Mr. Falconer, you're clearly out of line. This clearly goes.
This whole court is out of line.
and in the order of four bald heads, I feel like four bald heads is a fair rating to give this match. Sounds like it was perfectly booked, Mr. Falconer. And for future cases, I suggest watching yourself. You're walking a thin line here.
This was a hard one. I do think that this match was a little too long.
It was a little too long.
Like, by the end of the first 20 minutes when they went to the draw, I was already thinking it was a bit long, and then the two overtimes is a bit much. But yeah, man, like some of those reversals and like the bridge spots that you were talking about were fucking great. The involvement of woman at the end, Miss Elizabeth could not give a fuck about being there, but woman was on point.
I will concede that Miss Elizabeth did not care. She was giving nothing. Woman was the entire bit of energy. Her and like whoever Hart on the outside with the megaphone, they were the like keeping the crowd hyped the whole time.
Yeah.
I love woman.
Next up we have the Steiner Brothers versus Harlem Heat for the WCW Tag Team Championships. Harlem Heat are accompanied by Sister Sherry and Colonel Robert Parker.
Execution, you're up first. Please make a case.
So these low-life hooligans in the crowd won't stop revving their fucking bikes. This match takes longer to start than Bull Nakano and Medusa got overall put together. All right? Steiner and...
You get hype, you stay hype!
Steiner and other Steiner just keep mugging to the crowd. They clearly don't want to be there. And yeah, I don't know. I didn't think the match was all that special. I think Scott Steiner was an absolute mess in ring. All of the punches that he was throwing were either like a full foot away from contact, clearly visible on the camera, or he was straight up just punching Stevie Ray in the face. There was no middle ground to that. And the next like few matches, we start to get into the like almost McMahonification of this era of wrestling, with like a lot of nut shots and a lot of like sort of like very juvenile like kind of butt humor. I felt like overall it was just kind of generic. They didn't really give a lot of story to the Steiners' journey becoming number one contenders, so the belts didn't really factor in. It didn't feel like it was anything that the Steiners had worked towards. It didn't feel like it was anything that the Heat were trying to keep. It really felt like just kind of a filler tag match. The manager interference at the end is so over the top. They do like a double baby powder spot and then a cane shot. Stevie Ray completely no-sells the baby powder that he gets to the face. And you're telling me that the ref can't see that level of interference? I don't know. It wasn't the worst match on the card, but it was completely middle of the road, generic, just poor booking. Wasn't really overly moved by anyone's performance, face or heel. Didn't do it for me.
Defense, what is your case for this match?
All right. The most important thing about this match, which is going to sound derogatory, but legit, this is probably one of my favorite outfits I've ever seen in the history of wrestling. Harlem Heat comes out in the most fire fucking outfits I've ever seen. So they are...
Literally.
Yes. So they're wearing black pleather onesies, but the onesies come up the front, like, and yes, they have flames coming up the legs. Like, ah, oh God, I want to wear these so bad. But the onesie comes up, and there's this fucking cool punk O-ring right on their chest, and then it, like, that's how it connects, and then there's little strappies that go down their back. So it's almost a halter, but it's not a halter. It's more like a racer back. But it's, like, it's so cool. It looks so sick. I would wear the fuck out of that, and they should win just for the outfit alone. And the Steiner brothers look sick because they're in that, like, super 90s, like, black... and then with, like, neon print on top of the black dancewear, which is, like, I had, like, 5 leotards like this when I was a kid.
It was very CNC Music Factory.
Okay.
Oh, now there's a reference I get.
I really liked this. Like, this was a really, like, fast-paced match, and the energy was up the whole time. The crowd was going nuts the whole time. They were revving their engines because they were really excited about this. And I think that, wild. Pardon?
They're going hog wild?
They're going hog wild for this match.
They were wild hogs.
I don't see that as a bad thing.
Have you seen wild hogs?
No. So Harlem Heat has Sister Sherry and Colonel Robert Parker, on the side for them. And, Colonel Parker is doing, like, cool shit where he's just, like, wiping his ears with his hanky because the crowd is being so loud with their engines. He's just doing cool shit like this. And Harlem Heat keeps, like, running outside of the ring to escape the Steiners, doing all this classic heel shit. And then once they actually finally get into the ring, it's, like, super fast-paced. There's tons of huge crossbodies, and everyone in this is, like, super large, so everything looks really cool. Sister Sherry is really sick. She, like, at one point when one of, I think it was Booker, was running around the outside, she, like, stands in front of him because Scott Steiner was gonna jump down onto him, and she just stands in front of him, and she's just like, I'm not afraid of you, I'm not moving, and she basically just, like, uses herself as a human shield in, like, a really nonchalant way, and obviously Scott Steiner is a face, so he just has to, like, awkwardly get down, and he cannot attack this woman, and it's sick. And then at one point Booker does like a cool break dance up to standing, which is cool.
It's called the Spinneroonie, please.
It is called the Spinneroonie.
I learned something. And I didn't think this was baby powder. They describe it as salt that they use, but
it was clearly baby powder.
Okay. I just believe the kayfabe, but Colonel accidentally salts his own boy,
Stevie Ray,
who kind of like is like, ah, but then he like also salts Scott Steiner in the face, and then he hits Scott Steiner in the head with his cane. He literally breaks his cane in half, like half of it just goes flying off into the middle of the ring off of Scott Steiner's head. And now we know why he became the way that he does. And it was sick.
The quack quack.
And Harlem Heat retained for all their like heel shenanigans, and it was sick. I was so entertained the whole time.
Prosecution, do you have any closing statements on this? I can be swayed.
Again, you know, I just think like. Really, it revolved around like the sort of like overbooking of the manager interference at the end. The like, I don't understand what accidentally baby powdering Stevie Ray added to the equation, especially when Stevie Ray like no sold that interference. It's preposterous to me that the ref didn't see three separate foreign objects happen. Like, I don't know. It like, and again, like I think it was just a thing where it was like this was an adequate tag match, but was just like kind of bogged down by like all of the outside shenanigans. The Steiners were like, Rick Steiner might as well not have been in the match, which is a shame because he's a great wrestler. And yeah, Scott Steiner just throwing potatoes. There's no need for that.
Well, I believe I've heard all I need to hear. Will the prosecution and defense please approach the bench? I'll be honest with you. I haven't heard enough evidence in this case to make a decision either way. This is a dismissal. Gets three bald heads.
No points. I
can't possibly make a decision one way or the other. Please proceed with the rest of the pay-per-view.
Wow.
That's so cool.
you go for this next one.
This like interstitial bit that doesn't count but is cool because it has like, it's like a promotional thing where they got all the wrestlers to like dress up in biker gear and sit on motorcycles and like ride on motorcycles, and they were clearly just like in a car beside them like filming them on these motorcycles on a highway. And one of the shots, like, all of the wrestlers are wearing really funny, like, cliche biker gear. And I don't know any of these fucking wrestlers because I don't know anything. But one of the wrestlers has his teeny tiny little, like, chihuahua-ass dog decked out in biker, like, a little biker vest. And he's holding a teeny tiny little knife. The dog is holding a little knife. And it's so sick that this giant wrestler has a dog that he gave a baby knife to.
I definitely went to
that's
the bathroom.
That's a second point. Second point for the pay-per-view.
Okay. So are we going on to the next match?
Yep.
Next
match defense, please.
Okay. So the next match is Eddie Guerrero versus Ric Flair, the U.S. heavyweight champion. And Ric Flair is accompanied by Woman and Elizabeth again, because of the Four Horsemen. Eddie Guerrero comes in looking real sick in red sequins. Oh man, this is right as the sun is setting. It's perfect as Ric Flair comes out to like the perfect sunset. He's glowing. So the match starts with lots of slaps to the face from each other. Like, they're both just, like, hitting each other in the face, being, like, super disrespectful. And then Ric Flair keeps doing, like, bullshit heel stuff where he's running to the outside and, like, going to, like, hide behind Elizabeth and going to hide behind a woman. And woman's doing her, like, sick work again. She's getting, like, she's doing the same thing where she's, like, being a human shield and just, like, walking in front of Ric Flair so that Eddie can't really do anything. So, initially, Flair does a lot of running to the outside. They both, like, take their time at the beginning of this match, like, really getting, like, the tension building. Because it is a pretty big belt, the U.S. Heavyweight Championship. And then there's some really dynamic moves from Eddie. He's doing really cool drop kicks, and his drop kicks are, like, ridiculous, where it looks like he's gonna, like, jump outside of the ring with his drop kicks. Like, I don't understand. Dusty, on commentary, keeps referring to the devilish women outside, which is really great throughout. Devilish women with their devilish eyes. At one point, Eddie trips Ric Flair, and it looks like he's just tripping an old-ass man who just, like, face plants, and it's so sick. And I love this match, because, like, I feel like Flair and Eddie are really well-matched, because, like, Eddie's really technical and, like, flippy and showy, and Ric Flair is, like, he's the perfect seller. Like, he just wants to sell all of Eddie's moves so bad, and he, like, does extra, like, flails every time he gets thrown. He'll do, like, a couple extra bounces, and he'll be like, ah! And he'll do so much, like, mugging, and it's great. At one point, Eddie does the Ric Flair walk, which is really, like, disrespectful and cool. And then at one point, Eddie tries to, like, take Ric Flair's old-ass untanned butt out. And that's funny. And then Flair does a...
Was it?
It was funny. He got his butt out. And then Flair does a figure four on Eddie, and he uses the ropes. Like, Ric Flair, like, uses the ropes to do his figure four, and the ref doesn't see. And then a woman grabs Ric Flair's arms and helps him pull down, and that extra leverage that the ref can't see because he's over there on the ground trying to, like, tend to Eddie. The ref doesn't see this interference, and Eddie taps, and so Ric Flair retains. And it's a bummer, but it's a really good match. And I thought, again, the perfect amount of interference. They don't actually, like, get up onto the ring and, like, interfere and do bullshit, but just at that peak moment, woman gets in, gets the heel to win. It's great heel work.
Execution?
Your Honor, my esteemed opponent in this court of wrestling law doesn't even know how the match finished. Eddie Guerrero did not tap. Mr. Flair did indeed have Mr. Guerrero.
Oh, it's a pin.
In the figure four.
It's a pin.
Miss Woman did interfere, but Mr. Guerrero was counted for a pinfall. And that's how he lost.
Sorry.
Right. So I move for that entire, all of that evidence to be dismissed.
Okay.
As my opponent clearly did not pay attention to this match.
I wrote it down. I was just carried away.
Where do I start? Mr. Guerrero comes out in practically Evel Knievel cosplay, which is frankly beneath him. He didn't need to pander to this motorcycle crowd. In the same way that WCW cannot decide if the Four Horsemen are faces or heels, Mr. Flair cannot decide if he is a sneaky cheater or if he is a tough veteran. His performance and his ring psychology in this match is all over the place, completely inconsistent. Every 3 minutes in this match, somebody runs for a rest on the outside, and that's not just Mr. Flair running out to take a breather and hide behind his valets. Mr. Guerrero takes plenty of breaks himself. Both of them seem completely gassed. And I thought there was very little chemistry between these two performers. Two, dare I say, all-time greats. Once again, it's underserved by the piss-poor booking of late 90s WCW. And The last nail in the coffin is the Ric Flair butt. Like,
it doesn't come fully out. It's funny.
You know, I believe in Ricochet and Johnny Gargano when they say that wrestling is art. And these nut shots and these butt shots are, quite frankly, beneath this beautiful art form that we are here today to discuss.
Ric Flair selling the fuck out of Eddie's moves is art. And I rest my case on that. Also, Falconer, Ric Flair Mr. is like Falconer. Fucking an amazing heel. I don't know what he's talking about with like, I've heard enough.
Mr. Falconer, butts have been a part of wrestling since Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon and their infamous WrestleMania 10 ladder match. You should know better.
I also just want to say my last closing argument is that Ric Flair retaining here was a huge missed opportunity in putting a young up-and-coming face over. That there was clearly a glass ceiling for Mexican-American talent in WCW at this point, and I think they should have put the strap on Eddie.
All right.
Negative 10
in
points.
In my
for
opinion,
interrupting
from the arguments, two great performers. It sounds like Eddie Guerrero was putting on a show and Ric Flair was selling for Eddie. Dusty Rhodes on commentary. Sweet Eddie doing jump kicks out to the outside of the ring. I didn't quite get that part, but I got the spirit of what you're saying.
Just cool drop kicks.
And even in light of the evidence to this finish that the defense clearly misrepresented, I believe this sways more on the side of the defense. And I am going to rule the side of the defense for 3 1/4 bald heads.
Cool.
I think that's about right.
I feel like that's actually a really good rating for this match. Yeah.
I should start doing this every pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Recess court is resumed.
Next up, we got a Jimmy Hart and the Giant promo against Hulk Hogan, which I actually thought was like a pretty decent promo from Mr. Show.
Yeah, he's so intense.
Yeah.
He just does the entire thing at full, like, number 10 volume. He's just like screaming the entire time.
It was a little confusing though, because he talks about like Hogan joining the NWO as a betrayal.
Yes.
And he references, he says, like, Hulk Hogan, like, I used to watch you when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And then you betrayed me, and, like, you joining the NWO is a reminder of that betrayal.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of, like, what the initial betrayal from Paul White's childhood he was referencing.
I mean, I thought that he meant, did Hulk Hogan, like, have a match against him or attack him at some point?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought he meant.
Yeah. No, like...
He did.
Okay.
Yeah.
When?
Hulk Hogan definitely ganged up on the Big Show with the NWO at some point before this match. So there was an initial betrayal.
Sure, but, like, sick. But he references, like, he said that, like, that betrayal reminded him of the betrayal he felt as a child. Which I don't understand what betrayal that...
No, he didn't say that. He was saying that when Hulk betrayed him, it was like he was betraying that child.
He was saying, I've always looked up to you,
and by turning on me, you were betraying that child who always looked up to you and loved you.
Okay, I misinterpreted.
This note-taking will be noted for the rest of the trial.
Oh, come on. You said that...
The accuracy of the notes.
Interstitial segments were not admissible as evidence, Your Honor. I object.
I do want to just say that because we just watched the Big Show, seeing the Giant at this time was so amazing. And his long, blonde, like, wavy hair... is so good. He looks fucking amazing. I was like, what the fuck, Paul?
What happened?
Oh no.
See what happens when you lose your long and luxurious hair.
All right. Let's move this along. Let's not talk about hair.
We have a tag match of NWO versus WCW. We have the Outsiders, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, versus Sting and the worst man on the entire planet, Lex Luger.
Wow. All right. Strong words from the prosecution. You want to kick us off on this?
Yeah, Lex Luger is the worst man on the entire planet.
Noted.
Wait, why? With his Jim Carrey Grinch-ass face.
Oh, okay.
His complete lack of charisma. Sting, his face paint in this is particularly bad. This is like pre-Crow Sting. And he honestly looked like a jack-o'-lantern painted by Jeff Hardy. It was fucking rough. And to kick this match off, before the entrances are even finished, Mr. The Brain Heenan straight up says, "Nobody cares who wins and loses." Which just primes me to not give a shit at all. Luger legit looks like he doesn't even want to be there. This really, really could have used a WWF like video package. And it's very clear at this time why you're like WCW and WWF, why people were invested in one product over the other. Because like WCW shot so high with these like big overarching faction storylines. I think if you look at like New Japan Pro Wrestling now and how we talk about New Japan having sort of like a sliding scale of heel to face factions, that like Los Ingobernables when they're facing Chaos are heels, but Los Ingobernables when they're facing Suzuki Gun or Bullet Club are faces. And I think that's something that they're trying to do here with WCW and NWO and the Four Horsemen. They're trying to set up sort of a sliding scale of like Sting and Lex Luger representing true and true WCW, Four Horsemen kind of in the middle, and NWO as like the pinnacle, the heels even against the historical heels of the Four Horsemen. That's something that I can understand through years of watching wrestling and understanding of professional wrestling history. That is something that is completely garbled and unclear in the structure of this pay-per-view and in the storytelling of this match. That like I really, really needed some kind of video package to explain a little bit of like, this is the first pay-per-view that WCW had since the formation of the NWO, and we don't even get that flashback clip to Nitro. We don't get that clip of Hogan coming out and being the third man. There's like, if you are just tuning into this pay-per-view as we are without having watched the Nitros beforehand, there's no understanding as to why these people are so hated, why Sting and Lex Luger are teaming up against them. Nothing here really makes sense. We get a couple of really uninspired spots of like Sting doing a flare flop that turns into a headbutt nut shot. Again, just this really low brow, awful wrestling. The match finally starts to get some momentum with like a Stinger splash in the corner, taking Kevin Nash to the outside to put him in the Scorpion Deathlock. And then Luger kills all of the momentum by doing one move and then flexing for 4 minutes to the camera. I totally missed the finish here because I just didn't care. It was a really uninspired tag match. From the jump, it felt like a foregone conclusion that NWO was going to win. It really felt like just like a thrown together tag team of two guys who needed a spot on the card in Sting and Luger, who had no chemistry together as a tag team, didn't really know what they were doing in the storyline of the match. They hadn't really set up the stakes of WCW as a corporation versus NWO as this invading takeover force. The storytelling was just lacking. The performers here are three of the all-time greats and the worst wrestler in the entire world, Lex Luger, but they just didn't really come together. I fucking hate Lex Luger.
Wow. All right. Strong words from the prosecution. Defense, it's your time.
Okay. Scott Hall and Kevin Nash come out being real cute because they start off the match by doing rock, paper, scissors to determine who starts, which is just really bro-y and cute.
That was awesome.
And Kevin Nash looks really great in, like, he's ginormous and he's in this all red tasseled gear, which looks cool. And Sting comes out. I think I have seen Sting once or twice before he was like the Crow. But you, in your description of his face paint, failed to fucking describe how sick Sting looks when he comes out in, like, his bright, tassely sequined coat.
He borrowed a coat from Macho Man.
No, with the face paint and the sequin coat. It was so cool. I know none of you guys watch Drag Race, but, like, it was a fucking moment.
Drag Race.
Looked like Asia O'Hara. It was great. And I wrote down that Lex Luger bounces his titties to display his dominance despite his face.
Disgusting, his face.
I will say there was a little bit of confusion because, like, Sting pokes Kevin Nash in the eye and then knocks Scott Hall out of the ring, even though he wasn't, like, the legal man, which was a little confusing, but I took it to mean that, like, the, like, you know, the good old WCW boys were, like, scrappy and really, really willing to fight and, like, fucking destroy the NWO because they just hated them that much. And the crowd went fucking wild for that spot. So clearly the NWO really deserved it. Like, I got that just through the in-ring storytelling. The match in general is, like, really back and forth. The momentum is always going from the outsiders to WCW boys. Like, it's very back and forth, which kind of keeps the tension up. I wrote down that Sting is so skilled he can accidentally fall into Kevin Nash's dick. So it was kind of an interesting finish. I guess you were confused by it, but, like, it was cool in my opinion because, like, it has, like, one, like, this is how tag teams should end a match, where, like, the team is working as a whole, where one team member is taking care of the non-legal guy to make sure he doesn't disrupt the pin. So Sting's got Kevin Nash outside the ring and he's submitting him in the figure four. And Kevin Nash is actually
Scorpion
tapping.
Deathlock.
It looks like a figure four. I don't fucking know. But he's like actually tapping outside, but they're not legal, so it doesn't matter. But the point is that Sting's like got him under control. But Scott Hall pins Luger inside the ring, and so the NWO end up winning. At some point, the ref hurt his head, and he was doing a lot of mugging to the camera that the ref had really hurt his head, but it ended up that the NWO won. I thought it was a perfectly serviceable match.
I think I've heard enough from the defense and the prosecution. I mean, you know, even to quote The Brain, the stakes could not be lower for this match. And, I could not be less invested. I feel like the NWO, this was just a dominance match for them to get over the powers of WCW, the two faces of WCW representing them. The rock, paper, scissors was cute. It sounded like a cute start to the match. And even with Sting's homing-like precision when unconscious to fall into Kevin Nash's dick, I do have to give this to the prosecution. This sounds like it was a throwaway type of match.
Mm-hmm.
I give this 2 3/4 bald heads.
That's probably accurate, Josh. This match was kind of a mess.
Yeah. Is there anything before the next match that you two want to discuss?
No, we're on to the main event.
Main event time. I will have you know that it is now tied between the prosecution and the defense.
Whoa.
3-3 right now.
Oh, my God.
It does all come down to this match, so make sure you bring your A games. Make sure you've done your research for this match, and good luck to the both of you. We're going to start off with the prosecution for this match.
All right. I get to start 2 in a row here.
That's fine.
Hulk Hogan versus the Giant for the WCW World Heavyweight title. We start off with the Let's Get Ready to Rumble guy.
Yeah!
Which I felt was like a little played out, if you ask me.
It's 1996.
I mean, like, they've been doing this forever. This was played out when they did it in Rocky III.
It's always cool.
It's definitely played out in 1996. He gives Hulk Hogan a fucking spiel that I can only assume Hulk Hogan wrote himself. Because this is an introduction longer than Daenerys Targaryen's.
Daenerys?
Look, I'm into the tequila now. There's no going back.
Wow. You read that entire series.
The court will note that it's Daenerys.
Yeah. This Hulk Hogan entrance of, like, weighing in at one of the most prolific figures in wrestling history, wearing black and white instead of his traditional red and yellow, for fucking, you know, freer of slaves, breaker of chains, wearer of skullets. He's already a decade past his prime here. This is a fucking joke. And that's the other thing, is that, like, Hogan comes in and he has to, like, run the clock, like, because they know that they have, like, a certain amount of time left before the end of the pay-per-view, and this is a very Vince McMahon-style thing of knowing that he can't go for as long as he needs to, so he's doing this cowardly, will I enter the ring, won't I enter the ring, like Vince McMahon in the cage match against Stone Cold, where, like, they need to fill about a third of the time of this match with this chicken shit weirdo heel like stuff on the outside of the ring, which is like doesn't make sense to the character of Hogan at the time of being the NWO, the like baddest dudes in WCW where the big boys play. Hogan is also still too over with the crowd, even with his half-ass attempts at like shouting like "Shut up, fatso." That, like, the majority of the people are still cheering for him, and it doesn't really work. And then, like, this is all before we even get to the match itself, which, like, 90s wrestling is, like, kind of in this interim between being hung up in the past and having a handful of performers that are years and years ahead of their time, like your Guerreros, like your Mysterios, like your Ultimo Dragons. And this match just reads as, like, 15 years past due, even in 1996, that where we've had some fairly interesting wrestling up until this point, this completely just reads as an overworked remake of Hogan and Andre from 1985 or whatever it was. They do a no-joke 5-minute test of strength with the hands clasped, and the, like, who's gonna get the other guy to his knees, that is just, like, the most trite and contrived, like, played-out wrestling. There's basically no interesting moves. I think the most interesting thing happens is that the Giant hits Hulk Hogan with the big boot, which commentary calls the big foot. And then mercifully, we are saved by an NWO run-in, some shenanigans, and Hulk Hogan ends up winning the World Heavyweight title.
Oh, just some shenanigans.
This was trash.
Okay.
Okay, defense.
All right. As previously discussed, the Giant, Big Show, looks amazing with his hair, and he's wearing, like, a sick black pleather, you know, his classic one-sided Andre the Giant singlet. Hulk Hogan comes out in his black and whites. I just wanted to say that it's amazing when the Let's Get Ready to Rumble guy says, "Let's get ready to rumble." The audience revs their engines so hard, and there's this amazing shot of this kid who's like plugging his ears like this. All the kids around him are so excited, but there's this one kid who's plugging his ears. He looks really distressed and upset, and then he sees that there's a camera pointing at him, and he goes, "Hi," and he just like waves at the camera while trying to plug his ears. It's so fucking
objection
funny.
That kid had nothing to do with this match.
No, it's true. It was just an amazing part at the beginning. So yeah, so Hulk is like playing the coward heel. He's doing all of the heel stuff he needs to do. I think he's working really hard to be the heel here and to like assert himself as like the new heel NWO presence. Like, he's doing a lot of like, Campbell's not wrong. Like, the first part of this match is just Hulk running away, which I'm sure is a huge shocker for the crowd who loves him so much. And then to see him being this like cowardly shitty heel who's like at one point walking up the fucking ramp being like, "I'm gonna leave," and then he turns around and comes back, like, it is sick. The crowd like doesn't know what hits them. This is not what they expect from Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan finally comes back, and again, he's doing great heel work where he's telling the crowd to shut up, and he's like working Big Show's arms, like working the Giant's arms a lot, doing a lot of classic heel stuff. He, at one point, he says, like, he's got him in a submission move, and he goes, "I'll break him in half!" And it's really cool. There's this really cool moment where Hulk is trying to coax the Giant to him to be like, "Come on, come at me, bro. Like, come at me." And then the Giant's just, like, takes a second. He's like, "You know what? No, you come at me." And it's, like, a test of wills. And then, like, Hulk Hogan kind of doesn't come at him because he's the cowardly heel. And it was cool. And at one point, also, Giant has a spot where he does the Hulk Hogan Hulk up, where he gets, like, all fired up and he's, like, down and he goes, like, and he, like, hulks up and, like, Hulk Hogan's like, "What the fuck?" And the crowd's really excited by that. Big Show cannot be felled. And then, so the shenanigans are actually really cool. So Scott Hall runs in and... the Giant throws him and then he picks him up and choke slams him, which paid for his house in the Big Show show. And then Kevin Nash runs in and he also gets choke slammed and it looks really cool. And everyone's like, "Big Show is going to fucking win this." But Hulk Hogan comes in and brains him with the championship belt and then he pins him. And it's a perfect heel turn move, like, not heel turn, he's already a heel, but it was just a perfect sealing of that heelness. And we can discuss what happens after the match after, but it is just cementing my point that Hulk Hogan is a perfect heel at this moment.
Oh, 60 seconds for the prosecution and defense for any closing arguments.
I would like to raise evidence of the post-match as being an extension of this performance.
Only if I get to rebuttal, because this is huge.
So first of all, we get Legend of Wrestling, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, under awful gimmick, the Booty Man.
He's the Booty Man!
Comes out with a cake for Hulk Hogan because it's Hulk Hogan's birthday. And then Hulk cuts a way too long telegraph promo about the Booty Man. Again, the Booty Man being his best friend. Hulk beats up the Booty Man. And then, if I may ask you, if I may call a surprise witness, Judge Josh Felix Pryor, you are familiar with the NWO, are you not?
Quite familiar, I'd say.
Could you, for the jury, please tell me, case sensitive, what the logo of the NWO looks like?
A small N, a big W, and a small O.
So this iconic moment of Hulk Hogan spray painting, defacing, and devaluing the WCW World Heavyweight title with the NWO logo, capital N, lowercase w, capital O, doesn't even get the logo of his own faction right. Tell you what, it's printed all over your boots, brother. Why didn't you just fucking look down? Travesty of a post-match, travesty of a match. I rest my case.
Can I have a rebuttal? Because I didn't realize we could talk about the post.
Defense, you have a minute.
The fucking after the match part is what seals the deal on Hulk and the NWO being like the hugest heel faction ever to hit them at this time. Because again, Booty Man comes out with a birthday cake for Hulk Hogan and Hulk Hogan goes on this huge rant about how he loves the Booty Man, how they've always been great friends, and then he just gets the outsiders to string him up and he beats the fuck out of him, and then he grabs the mic and he says to Ric Flair, he says, "If I'll do that to my best friend, what am I going to do to you, brother?" And it's just like, it's sick. Because you're like, apparently for no reason, he's just beating up this dude who he says he loves. And it just seems really cool. And then he spray paints NWO in black on the belt, which is like a huge disrespectful move, like a huge statement. And everyone knows that like capital letters are more legible, and I do not fault him at all for doing capitals at that point because he had such a small surface area to work with and a spray can. I would also go for capitals in that. I would go for legibility over like graphics design. And Dust, it's perfect because Dusty Rhodes is on commentary and he talks about how aggrieved he is that Hulk is disrespecting the belt that he himself has worn, and he's just defacing it in this way, and he's like, this is like a dark time for WCW.
Okay. Two compelling cases. You know, as much as I've heard and I've listened to your post-match arguments, both of you know from previous dealings with me that post-match antics do not count for a bald head rating.
Whoa.
Both of you know this.
That's why I didn't want to count it in the first place, Josh. It's because I know sucking, you,
bro. Sucking up to the judge definitely doesn't help.
Getting the logo wrong was a huge linchpin in my argument here. So.
I will say for the record, though, that is very new in the NWO run. And Hulk Hogan also called it the New World Organization. the first promo out. So Hulk Hogan definitely had his missteps with the NWO and trying to lock down what that actually was. The match itself, I mean, you know, at first, you know, I had my preconceived notions about how this match would go. Campbell made a lot of sense with, you know, the match being slow. Hogan, you know, kind of having some chicken shit stuff. A little overworked, trying to play too much of the Andre, test the power and stuff like that. But as Lauren was describing it, honestly, it sounds like this was a good heel babyface match, and it sounded like Hogan was really trying to find his footing and maybe found it a little bit as a heel in this match. But the Giant hulking up in the match seemed like a really nice touch. It seemed like the crowd was really into it. I mean, I'm really on the fence with this one. I don't know. I think I've made my decision. I think I've made my verdict here. By a score of 3 1/8 bald head, I have to give it to the defense. I have to give it to the defense on this one. I'm sorry.
Yes!
There was so much fan service in that match, and it sounded like it was really good Hogan-esque match. And, you know, Hogan can go either way with his matches. You're not looking for a technical masterpiece. You're looking to be sports entertained.
Mm-hmm.
Crowd's going to love Hogan. I mean, I gotta give it to the defense on this one. Woo! That means the winner of the pay-per-view, and that ultimately means this pay-per-view is not trash. It goes to Hog Wild.
Yeah.
Hog Wild gets it.
Yeah. Nice.
Hey, congratulations.
Thanks, man.
I did think the Giant... The Giant hulking up spot was really fun.
I will say that it was a very okay match for what it should have been, and maybe that's me looking back at it with hindsight, where I will say in Campbell's defense is that the crowd will not boo Hulk Hogan.
Ever boo Hulk Hogan in any case, any circumstance. Yeah. But again, this is like new heel Hulk Hogan. It's a novelty. I feel like I'd look back, if I rewatch this match, I feel like I'd be pretty nostalgic about it.
Mm.
And I feel like I would naturally kind of lean towards liking this kind of match. And just based on the descriptions, you're playing to a little bit of a biased judge.
Right.
I feel like maybe. I told Lauren before that good luck with this Hogan one, and I think she pulled it out.
Nice. I'm going to be honest. I really, really liked watching this pay-per-view.
Yeah.
There were a lot of matches on here that were really hard to nitpick, and I like, because that was the whole thing, is like, and I didn't talk about the wrestling in any of those matches. I only talked about like problems that I had with the story, problems that I had with the presentation. All of the wrestling on this card was really good. The outdoor, like
set was cool.
The set was fucking awesome. The motorcycle crowd, like, there weren't seats. It was, everybody was just sitting on motorcycles revving their engines and shit,
or standing.
It fucking ruled.
It was awesome.
I remember really enjoyed watching this. I watched this initially when it first came out, and I haven't watched it in years. But I remember being really, like, pissed off at the crowd during the Malenko-Benoit match because, like, none of them were actually paying attention to the match.
Right.
They booed hard, especially for the second overtime call.
Yeah.
They fucking booed, and it was rough to watch.
Like, we usually like to finish things off with, like, a high spot and a botched spot, something that we really liked about the pay-per-view, something that we didn't like so much. Josh, you didn't really watch this one, or you didn't rewatch this one. So I feel like if you want to take a back seat here and you don't have a high spot and a botch spot, that's fine. Sorry?
Said I'm going to leave it with you two.
All right. You want to go first?
Sure. I'm going to start off with my botch because we've already covered it.
Mm-hmm.
The ending of the ladies' match was just horrible. Really confusing. So botched, like, in the most literal sense of that term. Like, there was no way that that was how it was supposed to end, and it was just really confusing, and the ref was confused, and the commentators were confused, and the ladies were confused, and the ladies were just doing their best to be like, I guess I'll just, like, fucking destroy this bike and try to give the crowd something. It did a disservice to those two women who were actually putting on a pretty good match. My high spot is, so at the closing of this show, you were right to complain about Bobby Heenan being a fucking terrible commentator the whole time.
God.
I will say, you were wrong in that he didn't just do those early calls for the women's match. He did it the whole fucking show. Anytime someone was being pinned or anytime someone was being submitted, Bobby Heenan would say, "It's over. He's got him. It's done. That's the three count. It's done." And it was always not it. And it was like, just shut the fuck up. You're, like, really ruining this for me.
Yeah.
And, like, it was clear that Tony Schiavone was just like, no. No, it's not. Like, was so over him. But my best spot, like, after all of that shit of Bobby being, like, a fucking piece of shit the whole time, a terrible commentator, the very end, after this, like, crazy Hulk Hogan, like, cake thing where he turns on his best friend, Tony does, like, this great, like, closing the show speech, and he's like, "Well, that was crazy." Dusty goes, like, "That was a huge insult to the fucking belt. Great, like, pay-per-view. We hope to see you guys next week." And then Tony Schiavone, he just closes the pay-per-view up. He's like, "And that's it. Like, hope to see you guys next time, blah, 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 blah." Doesn't give Bobby Heenan a chance to talk at all. Bobby Heenan's not having it. He immediately goes, "No, wait, 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 wait." And it just cuts to credits. The fucking showrunners didn't want him to talk again. Like, there was no time for him.
He did him dirty.
He thought he could just get a fucking word in. And he was like, "No, wait, 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 wait." And it was like, "No, fuck you." Credits. It was perfect.
There was a really funny, that, like, just reminded me, I forgot to write this down, but there was a really funny spot where it was, like, coming out of one of the, like, ad segments or coming out of one of the promo segments where Schiavone was, like, trying to promote Fall Brawl, or, like, whatever the next pay-per-view was.
Yep.
And he was doing it in, like, the most convoluted runabout way where he was trying to say, like, "Hey, if there are any kids out there watching, you know, you're probably thinking that it's back to school time. And, you know, if it's back to school time, that means it's probably going to be fall soon. And what do you think about in the fall? But the Fall Brawl." And that was his, like, four-step approach to promoting a Fall Brawl. But the entire
time. Huge leap.
Yeah, huge leap. And the entire time, Heenan was just trying to interrupt him to talk about some inane bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, where he's like, "I don't know. I don't think there are any kids watching. I think it's probably past their bedtime." And it was
he was such a fucking idiot.
He was like, "No, let me just do this." And yeah. Like, sorry, that was just, like, a thing that I remember that happened. That was not my high spot nor my botch spot. My botch spot in this...
Didn't care in WCW, though.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Like, it was really fun.
We can't watch Heenan and WCW and judge him. Like, it just, I know you guys have only seen bad Heenan examples, but, you know, give him a break.
That's good to know that he had a good time that one time.
my botch spot in this, I touched on this a couple of times, was just like a little bit of the product of its time, booking with like the Sonny Ono stuff. But really, really specifically, and I didn't want to bring this up in the context of the match itself, because I didn't want to seem like I was like fucking making jokes about this. But in the Harlem Heat match, this really fucking bummed me out, actually, while we were watching it, that it was like the Harlem Heat coming out with Colonel Parker, who is like clearly a nod to like a Southern gentleman, Jefferson Davis, Colonel Sanders fucking guy, and like the Harlem Heat just like running up, like trying to get heat, like riling up the crowd. And there's a spot before the match starts where Booker T like starts mugging to the crowd, and one of these fucking bikers in the audience holds up a Confederate flag and starts waving a Confederate flag in Booker T's face. And it, like, it was just, I had, like, we just watched the new Jack Dark Side of the Ring, where they're showing all of that footage of him in, like, Mid-South doing the gangsters with, like, people waving Confederate flags. And it's just, like, so fucking shitty to watch this. And because that's the thing, is, like, a lot of people will, like, if you look at the Sonny Ono booking in a vacuum, people will make excuses for that kind of thing. People will make excuses for the choppy choppy your PP in WWF. People will make excuses for a lot of the like incredibly xenophobic and racist booking in wrestling, being like, oh, it's a cartoon, you know, it doesn't, there's no bearing on real life. It's like, it's, you know, the people who are being racist are supposed to be the heels, so it's okay that they're being bad. And like, this is a really clear-cut example of like playing to racial tensions in professional wrestling, where like clearly that resonates in the crowd. That someone in that crowd held up a flag that basically what they're saying is like, I think you should still be a slave.
Yeah.
Like, that fucking sucks.
They chose to run a show in Sturgis, and they knew where they were running the show.
Yeah.
And it's bikers.
Yeah. Mm.
And bikers, I mean, like, if you're talking about, like, you know, the people that are going to get that kind of reaction out of, you know, like, honestly, like, They knew what they were going into. And I thought it was a little irresponsible, quite frankly. And like, but I mean, like, and then it's like, you know, what do you do at that point? You know, like, I don't know. Like, it's, you're trying to get heat. And, you know, and in the New Jack documentary, it's like, I'm just trying to get these people as riled up as possible.
Yeah.
But that's the real demographic that this is playing to in this, this event, right? So,
And like, especially as like a mixed race Japanese person, I think like the Sonny Ono shit hits a little harder for me than it does for a lot of other people. But like, again, like that kind of like xenophobia, like him doing, like, I didn't write down what he fucking said, cause it just pissed me off so much. But like a lot of the stuff that he was saying to the camera and a lot of stuff that he was saying was, I was just like, this is, it's such an antiquated concept of like, this is like, we're literally going back to tensions of like the late 1940s.
Yeah.
In 1996, this idea of like, Honda versus Harley Davidson is like an innocent enough at face value, but it like, it goes back to this like post-war fucking like internment camp, like occupation. Like, I don't want to get too heavy. Like, we're fucking drunk, like talking about wrestling, but like a lot of the, more so in this pay-per-view than a lot of others. And I think maybe because of the crowd and because there was like that Confederate flag there, that like, this really hit a nerve for me on a racial note that a lot of other wrestling doesn't.
Well, and they knew what they were doing too, right? It's the Honda and Harley thing, right? Like, at some point, like in the, at their core, they knew that Medusa coming out with the American flag jacket and like, you know, Bull Nakano coming out as, you know, like the Honda riding, you know, foreigner, like essentially, right? Like, they knew what kind of reaction that was going to get, and that was very much wrestling around this era. I mean, that's all of wrestling around this era. I mean, you can look at WWE, WCW, Mid-South, like any of that, right? And they're all kind of doing the same thing. So
I
completely get it though.
That being said, my high spot here, far and away, Bull Nakano. Holy shit. That was like if you put like Asuka in 1990s wrestling.
Very Asuka vibes.
And this is a person that like I haven't really watched a whole lot of Bull Nakano, and I think that like in the grander scope of like what we watch in this podcast, I think like one of the big things that we're really missing out on is like that 90s Joshi wrestling. If you look at like the heyday of Aja Kong, You look at like Bull Nakano. You look at Manami Toyota. Like, there's like so many of these like really, really all-time great yet underrated performers that I was blown away by her wrestling, especially in the context of like 90s women's wrestling in North America.
Yeah.
And just like how much she fucking brought it. I would love to go back and check out some like Tokyo Dome 1990s women's wrestling, because like everything, the little that I have seen of that, it's all fucking fire. It's amazing.
Yeah, I feel like she, like, even with the shitty spot that the women were given, I feel like she really brought it in that match as much as she could. Like, she wasn't given a lot and she fucking did a lot with it, you know?
Yeah, totally.
With the nunchucks and like her intensity, and it was sick.
So I think that about does it for WCW Hog Wild 1996.
Big night of decisions.
It's hard to be judge, isn't it, Josh?
That was very easy for me, actually.
Okay. It was hard to argue against, because last time I was arguing for, and like being that negative was really difficult, because I did really enjoy this pay-per-view a lot.
Yeah, it's tough, eh? Like, yeah. I was against last pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And I hated it. I hated it.
You want to watch wrestling because you love wrestling, you know? We enjoy
that.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying to Josh while you were having a pee. I was like, it's like, we all watch wrestling because we like it, so to argue that the entire pay-per-view is not worth watching is like
so hard
and disingenuous. Yeah.
I have a lot of fun doing these episodes. If you're out there listening and you have like suggestions for kind of like maybe a pay-per-view that you love that you think everybody else hates and you want someone on this podcast to advocate for it, you can hit us up at Stone Cold Shots or facebook.com/stonecoldshots. Holy shit, I've had too many cold shots here.
You can also leave us a rating and review on any podcasting app that you may use. Give us that 5 bald head rating.
5 bald heads, baby.
Hey, all day. 3 ain't enough, we need 5. Oh, I was going to say, hit us up on Twitter. I think we still have a Twitter account.
Twitter, Instagram.
Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, we're around. You can check us out.
All those socials.
Yeah, hell yeah.
One day we'll get a Stone Cold Shots Bumble.
I'll get it going. I'll see how many likes we get.
No, wait.